Welcome to Scars to Stars, where conversations and personal stories let us know we are not alone. In this show, you will meet authors and speakers from our books and events as they share vulnerable personal stories to spread hope and inspire you through adversities in your own life. The world is a difficult place. You will find like-minded people here with kind hearts and supportive souls. I am your host, Dina Brown Mitchell. I am a suicide survivor and the founder of the Realize Foundation. I am so glad you are here. Let's dig into this meaningful conversation.
Hello, everybody. It's Dina at the Realize Foundation, and I'm here today with a really special guest, Tommy Walker, and he is known as the Mind Engineer, and he has some fascinating things to talk to you about today. So I hope you'll enjoy this episode and our conversation. So welcome, Tommy.
Thank you, Dina, for having me here. It's an honor to be able to be talking with you and sharing this with your community.
Yeah, I'm so excited about the content you promote in the world. And I think one of the most fascinating concepts I've heard from you is the concept of multiple personas pulling us in different directions. And I would love for you to talk about that.
Thank you. Of course. I know it sounds weird when I talk about these things, at least for some people, because it's like, you know, talking about having different personas inside of me. But what we realized, Dina, that, you know, sometimes people say, I'm going to go do this, and then I don't do it, right? Or I'm going to stop doing this, and you still do it. That, in a way, starts proving that there's not just one mind, one consciousness, one being, because if not, we would just say, I'm going to go to the gym and start going to the gym. I'm going to start meditating. I'm going to start eating healthier. But suddenly, I deviate from what I'm thinking. Isn't that right?
Yes, absolutely.
So from there, we got to start maybe agreeing, and I'm not saying you, but the general public that is listening, right, is that there is something going on in our mind. So what I call it is there are parts of us, a part of me that would rather stay in my comfort zone and not go to the gym. Another part of me that, well, maybe that's the same part, but maybe another part of me that, yes, wants to go to the gym and wants to look healthier, wants to be healthier, whatever. So when we start understanding that, it makes it a bit easier. And this is kind of the method that I have, is listening to those parts of us. Because we have been bombarded for so many years with different big names. I don't need to name them, but big names out there, that their techniques work to a certain point and towards specific people. What do I mean with that, right? We have come from generation after generation of authoritarianism. You shut up, you eat your food, and don't question anything. So we just, as kids, went down and did what we were told, right? What are we seeing in the new generations? The new generations are challenging us, are questioning us. They want to understand why not, why yes. And when we do that from a loving place to our kids, normally, we ease their mind. So if it's working with the new generations, maybe the authoritarianism that we were exposed to as kids, right, and that it's still in the world, don't get me wrong, is this pushing myself, go do it. You know, push yourself to start eating great. Or the other thing that I see a lot, Dean, is the dance of fears that I call, right? Somebody that is scared of, you know, doing something, maybe, I don't know, doing a presentation, right? So the fear, let's put it like a bar, like we're measuring the strength of that fear. The fear is, I don't know, 6, right? Of doing the presentation. So what a lot of people out there do, right, these big names that work a lot with authoritarianism, is scare a lot the person. So what happens, yeah, if you don't do this presentation? What if you screw it up? What if, you know, they start kind of creating this fear of not doing. If I don't do it, I might get fired. If I don't do it, I might not get a raise. If I don't do it, I might not get this new position. So they scare themselves to do. And we see this a lot. And there was a big talk, I think it was, I can't remember his name, sorry, so many years ahead, but a guy out there that did a presentation about procrastination, that he said that when there was a deadline, there was more chances of doing things. Again, because of fear. If there's a deadline, the fear of not doing starts becoming more prominent. Why? Because if I don't do it, I'm going to hit the deadline, I'm going to not pass, I might fail the class, I might fail the exam, I might fail at work, I might not get a raise, whatever. So most people are working out of fear. And they use authoritarianism to try to get them out of there, quote unquote, but it's still fear to get them to do things. What I bring is listening to the parts of you that don't want to do. Like, silly, look at this, how silly it can sound, but how impactful this could be. Once I was talking about this and a woman said, okay, Tommy, you're saying that, you know, if I'm not doing something like procrastinating around a task is because there's a negative story, negative emotion behind it. And you know what? And she said this, Tommy, that is BS. What you're saying, that makes no sense. I don't like doing laundry. And I'm like, okay, I hear you. Thank you for sharing this. I appreciate it. Can you tell me, when you were a little girl, were you forced to do laundry by your mom? And she said, yes. Perfect. There you go. How did you feel when your mom forced you to do laundry? I felt controlled. So could it be that now you don't want to feel controlled, so that's why you don't have anybody on the outside forcing you to do laundry, so you hate it and you are not doing it? And her eyes just opened up and she was like, whoa, like something so simple. I imagine things are more complicated, right? Starting a relationship where you can get hurt, you know, asking for a raise at work where maybe your boss tells you that you're not doing a good job, so you don't deserve it. So that is a big hit to our confidence and different things that the mind is trying to protect us. So instead of going to war with our minds, and this is what most people teach, and that is why so many people are still struggling around the world, it needs about, you know, having different kids that they're fighting and try to understand their points of view. So you're going to talk to the part of you, say like, oh, I don't want to do this. Okay, I hear you. You might have valid reasons that you don't want to do this. Could you share that with me? As you do this weird exercise of talking to yourself and you come from love and learn, it's unbelievable how the mind opens up and starts revealing what's underneath. I have heard people say, I'm scared that if I ask for a raise, I might get fired. I'm scared that if I ask for a raise, they're going to tell me I'm doing a bad job and I'm going to feel like crap. So they start revealing the deeper. So procrastinating on doing something normally is a protective mechanism. The mind is not playing against us. Supposedly, it's playing for us, but with limited instructions, with limited knowledge, with limited information. So suddenly, when we're able to love and accept what is, so what I call is aligning the mind and the heart, aligning mind and heart, when the heart opens up with love, the mind feels safe. Mind is going to reveal what it's protecting you from. Or inner critic. Why do we have inner critics, right? A lot of people think that, oh, the inner critic, you know, it's the enemy. I got to shut it up. It's no, it doesn't stop. It's driving me crazy. Stop. And they go into war with their inner critic. The inner critic is a protective mechanism. You've learned since childhood, maybe, that by criticizing, you might get aligned to what you should be doing. So inner critic, welcome to my world. So you have the inner critic, the part of you that doesn't want to do, and those parts going toward the inner critic beating up the part of you that doesn't want to do, the part of you that doesn't want to do feel even more crappy, and it end up not doing what you need to do. So one of the things that I've learned in this personal development and also combining spirituality, that we are, I believe this, and I'm open to listening, debating, whatever, to others, I don't mind, that we're spiritual beings living in a human experience. So if we believe in something more, universe, God, whatever you want to call it, it's fine. We're talking about that higher being is pure love. And we made out of that, because when the Big Bang happened, whether, you know, we don't talk about spirituality, we came from the Big Bang. So we come from source. So source is imprinting in us. If it's imprinting in us, it means that we're loving beings. The problem is that we're rewired. We're wired when we come to this world to be loving, compassionate, empathetic. You see kids playing around, and normally, although there might be some hitting when they feel frustrated, they don't know how to deal with their emotions, but kids are loving, caring. There's no racism amongst kids. They just play with other kids. They don't care the skin color, their towel, if they're small, if they're girls, if they're boys, right? But society starts rewiring them into thinking different ways, not how they came by, you know, when they were born. So when we start understanding these things, it makes it easier to make changes. There are parts of us fighting and putting in different directions. We need to love and accept each part, because they were created from different moments in our past that we went through trauma, and they are protecting us in their own way. Even though, if you say, but Tommy, if I'm not asking for a raise, I'm not progressing my life. I'm stuck. I'm in pain. Yes, but the pain of being rejected by your boss if you don't get the raise is higher than the pain that you're feeling that you're staying where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's loving and accepting. One of the biggest things that I teach is love and acceptance.
Yes, I agree with you. It's funny, my husband is African-American, and he has T-shirts and pictures that have kids, like you're saying, playing together. And the caption is, you know, kids will play with anyone until someone tells them not to. It's so racism is a learned thing, just like all the other things you're talking about. It's like things that we've learned from something that happened usually when we're younger, that we have this belief, you know, that we just assume that it's true and move on with our life. And it holds us back in ways that we don't understand. And you explain it way better than I do. That's why I'm so glad you're here today, because there are things, you know, and I think there are things like that help us to be in more depression mode when we don't understand what it is. And I dealt with that my whole life. And I still am unpacking that in my 50s. But I think it's really important to understand where these beliefs come from. And we don't always have the understanding to do that for ourselves. So how do you help people find those things and understand them better?
So first of all, as you're saying, I love what you just said, it's about understanding, right? It's explaining to them and bringing this comparison. If I want to fix a car, I need to understand about engines. I cannot just get in there and try to fix a car if I have no idea about cars. The mind is this in a similar way. It would be the same. I need to understand the mind. In the same way, I need to understand behaviors. If I understand that behaviors are just protective mechanisms, the mind is my best friend. Although, you know, sometimes, again, who hasn't had a friend in high school that maybe was doing drugs, was doing alcohol, they were going down that road, but they were still our best friends that they were trying to, I don't know, maybe get us into their drinking with them, but they still loved us with their unresolved issues, but they still loved us. So with their limited mind back then or understanding or whatever, right, they were taking actions that were affecting us in a negative way, but they were not doing it on purpose to screw our life. Make sense? The mind is the same. The mind is our best friend, but, and this is what we need to understand, as we're growing up, let's put that there's one mind, as we were saying, right? There's one mind. As we grow up and we go through traumas, the mind starts splitting into pieces. It's not broken. It's like water separated from the source, taking a drop of water out of the ocean. We can just put it back, but it's separated. It has the same qualities as the rest, but now it went through a traumatic moment and it started the mind creating its own stories of that situation. But that part of us, for the mind is so amazing. Look at this. The mind has no time. A lot of people say, Tommy, the past doesn't exist. I'm sorry. If you close your eyes and you relive a past memory, it's happening now. Now your body is feeling what it felt back then. Your emotions are coming up. You might even start crying. You might get tense. So if there's no time, how could that happen? Because for the mind, time doesn't exist. Everything is running now. So that memory is a part of you that got stuck in time as a separate part of you, right? That went through trauma and thought. Look how basic the mind is. Seriously. Okay, when I spoke up, each time I speak up, my dad hits me. What would be the best course of action? Yeah, to stop receiving hitting from my dad if he's hitting me. As a kid, imagine a five-year-old says, each time I speak up, my dad hits me. What is the best course of action so I prevent my dad from, I avoid my dad hitting me? What can I do?
Stop.
Ta-da! You see how basic it is? Protective mechanism. Don't speak up. And then I beat myself up because I'm not speaking up. But wait, that part of me decided that it was safer to not speak up to protect me. So by beating it up, it's not speaking up, I'm confirming exactly that it's okay what it's doing. Because again, I don't speak up now. I'm being beaten up. I feel pain. So I'm going to hold on to what I'm used to, not speaking up. So a lot of people go into war with their mind as if we're the enemy. And a lot of people teach this. A lot of people teach that the mind is the enemy. It's against you. It's going to screw you up. No. That's why, again, I my even logo is a mind with a heart. We need to connect mind on heart. The mind wants to play this game the right way, but it needs guidance. It needs love. It needs understanding. So going now to the questions, how do we do that? First of all, is bring this information so that they can start bringing their, in a way, protective mechanisms down so that they don't attack themselves whenever they accept or recognize that they're doing something that it's not okay, because everything is okay. I even work with people, and this is going to sound harsh, but I work with people that have been abusers to others. And I tell them, it's okay. You made a mistake, yes, but you're not that person anymore. So if you keep beating yourself up because of what you did in the past, you will never overcome that. You will never become the person that you're meant to be. You made a mistake, yes. Let's try to understand why you did it. And I work with people that they did it because they were looking for connection. It wasn't the best way to look for connection. Of course, I agree. It's not okay, right? Because they hurt others. Don't get me wrong. But they were looking for something. They just didn't do it because. So if we understand that, at least it's easier to help that person get out of there and not do it again. When we condemn them and we put them down and they got to go to jail, you know, they got to, some people say you got to be castrated or whatever. We're condemning them for the rest of their life. And yes, they made a mistake. But by loving and accepting them, there are less chances for them to do it again.
It's interesting.
So love and accepting environment. This is one of the most important things, secret sauce in my work, is that I open up to whatever. I work with people that, you know, when they tell me the things they've done, it's okay, right?
Yeah.
So love and acceptance. Sharing that with them, reflecting that back at them so they can start seeing themselves with love and acceptance. A lot of people, for the first time in my sessions, they feel love and accepted for the first time.
I know.
So imagine that. So when you do that, the mind opens up. When a kid feels safe, this is psychology 1.0. When a kid feels safe and loved, they get out into the world to explore. Same happens with the mind, in the way that when you're creating a loving and safe environment, the mind is going to reveal what is going on.
Right.
So when you understand what's going on, imagine that, again, this woman is not wanting to be controlled by doing laundry. It's okay. We need to work on the meaning of control. Right? Another person might be thinking, I don't want to be in a relationship because it hurts. Why? Because they were raised in relationship, seeing mom and dad in a very abusive relationship. So they made up in their mind that relationships hurt. So each time they went into a relationship, they were looking for that pattern, a hurting partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they chose it in a subconscious level. I'm not saying they deserve or not anything, no judgment, just stating the facts. I went into abusive relationship. I allowed to be abused because that's how I was raised when I was a kid. There was some abuse at home. My parents did what, in a way, they thought was best. They loved me, yes, but they made mistakes. So there was abuse, screaming, hitting, cold showers, eating soap. So I went into a relationship that would do that to me, and I would stick around. And people would say, I tell you, why are you still around? Now I realize, you know, after I started this journey, that it was because that's what was done to me, and that's what I felt was the norm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's profound in a way that, you know, the reason we feel alone in the world is because we feel like no one understands what we understand. And sometimes we're understanding things that are normal, and sometimes we're understanding things that are not. But unless we have a conversation or talk about it, we don't know. And I think that's what we preach, is like the conversation and community and personal stories that we promote is what help people understand that someone else has been there, that you're not alone and you're not crazy for whatever thought or normalcy that you believe, because we all have those things in our lives that were negative and we stuffed down or we hid or we are like, you know, not understanding is the main point. And, you know, I had a suicide attempt when I was 27. And I didn't talk about it for 23 years until I lost a friend. And that just the part of going through grieving the loss of my friend and then understanding my own journey along with that was a really hard thing because I had never talked about it. I'd never acknowledged it. I never thought about it enough to understand. You know what I mean? So it's like all of us have those things that we don't talk about because we're ashamed or we're doubting ourselves. And what would you suggest if somebody who's listening to this that is in that place and not acknowledging something or not feeling like they're good enough to talk to someone about it?
So I love what you said. This is one of the main reasons why people don't reach out, because most people that don't reach out, right, they feel they're not good enough. They're not worthy. They're not worthy of your time. Even if they are going to pay you, they still feel so the worst come in the world, the worst thing in the world. There's something so broken in them that they're scared, so scared of reaching out. One reason is that. The other one is that a lot of people think that they're so broken that there's no way out. I have worked with so many people along these 15 years. I was working with a woman that she was diagnosed with depression, medicated, went through tons of different psychiatrists, and all told her, this is going to be the life that you're going to have from now on, like settle for this, right? We started working together in 3 months. Our psychiatrist told her, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. And we're going to slowly start getting off the medications. For the first time, she was able to start seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. I have worked with a lot of people that struggle with that. You know, psychologists, old school, there's a lot of people, different people out there. I'm not talking about general, but there are specific groups that unfortunately, like I'm working with a woman that she struggled with depression and her psychologist is telling her, oh, but you should look at the good things that you have in your life. You should, you know, see the nice things, focus on the good things. You got to do this, you got to do that. And she doesn't feel understood. She doesn't feel supported at all because right now she doesn't want to do anything. So instead of trying to get her out of there by putting, and that is authoritarianism again, that's what I was telling at the beginning of this conversation. I see it over and over again in subtle ways or bigger ways, right? Is getting in her, in the, like in the dark place, in the dark hole that she is, and just holding her mentally, emotionally. I'm not talking about touching, right? But holding space for her so that she can feel understood and that it's okay where she is. The other day she told me, everything in my life is okay. And I said, wait. You went through a really difficult situation right now. Why are you saying that everything is okay? Oh, but compared to others, she was making in her mind that compared to others, her life was not that bad. But she went through something really terrible and she was minimizing it. So I went into the darkness with her and hold space for her. I made her hug herself and say, you know, you have valid reasons to feel the way you do. Don't try to get yourself out of there. She said, oh, but Tommy, I'm tired. I get it. But being tired, trying to push yourself, denying how you feel, has that worked in the past 5 years? A question, seriously, has that worked in the past 5 years? Not really. So I told her, what if we try something different? Those words of accepting how she felt, recognizing her, and then inviting her, not telling her, oh, now do this. This is authoritarianism. What I do people is I'm learning a new language. Seriously, it's a love language. It's checking my words. Before I talk, in some cases, I stop myself and think, okay, I'm going to say this to her. How does that sound in my mind first? I'm not saying every word, but sometimes when I'm going to say something important, stop myself a second because I could have said, okay, it makes sense that you feel like this, but now let's try to feel this way. When I say that, I'm trying to pull her out of the hole. So I'm becoming, quote unquote, the savior. I don't want that. I want to help her get herself out of the dark place. Not me getting her out, showing her, guiding her out to get out. Hey, put a hand here, put your foot here, pulled up, whatever. Hey, I'll help you a little bit, but you pull yourself out. Because if not, you're going to need me for the rest of your life, and that's not the idea either. So is creating that loving and healthy environment for the person saying, a lot of people are struggling and most are not sharing. Look, Robin Williams. I read about him a little bit, and it said that as a kid, he felt really low confident, and he created these personas, these acts, to make people laugh so that he could feel loved and accepted. And it makes total sense because towards the end of his life, he had lots of swings of happiness and sadness, happiness and sadness because of that, because he had unresolved issues. He just numbed the pain. And that's what most people do, whether it is money, partner, kids, house, you know, projects, whatever, people numb. We need to learn that we live in a society that the most people are teaching us is to numb. It's loving and accepting. I feel pain. I feel depressed today. I feel sad. I feel lonely. I'm still with a partner, but I feel lonely. It's okay. It's okay. There's a reason why. And what is happening, and this is what I've studied more and more, is that as you're living the world today and you're seeing this movie in front of you called life, at the same time, there are memories from your past that are being activated that you're not seeing because they're in the subconscious mind. Subconsciously and the unconscious, whatever you want to call it, doesn't matter, but you're not aware of them. So when you feel lonely today, even if you're surrounded by people, it's not that. Maybe when you were a little girl, you were in a meeting where you felt lonely, nobody was looking at you, nobody was paying attention, you needed something, nobody talked to you, and you're reliving that moment with this event that is happening today. So many things that are happening today are just triggering unresolved issues. Most of the time, they stay here in the back, and we just feel like crap. And we try to numb it, ignore it, pretend it's not there, look at the good side. No, I need to turn around and look at the TV in the back of my head and say, wait, what's going on over here? Why is a part of me feeling so lonely? And see if a memory comes up. And if you do it correctly, a memory is going to come up when maybe, and I've seen this thousands of times, seriously. Tommy, I just remembered a memory where I was sitting in the living room by myself. Or I was sitting in the living room surrounded by people and I was ignored completely. Here you go. How did that little girl feel? Yeah. Oh, that little girl felt lonely, felt scared, felt not lovable, not good enough, whatever. Here you go. You're just reliving that past memory in the back of your head in this moment. Because the past is not gone. It's just waiting to come up so that we can resolve it and we can heal it.
That's a really good point.
Are you feeling alone, lacking hope, and unsure of the future? So many people are feeling the same way. How could you not after an unprecedented lockdown of the entire globe? The fallout has changed the normalcy we all knew. It's hard when you feel lost, and even harder when you're scared to talk about it. We are here to help. At the Realize Foundation, we provide peer-to-peer support through conversations, community, and personal stories. It is our mission to spread hope and let you know that you are not alone. If you are enjoying this podcast, I would love for you to become part of our membership community to get the peer-to-peer support you need. Learn more at the call to action link for Scars to Stars membership. I look forward to seeing you in our community of kind souls.
Sometimes it's something that simple that holds us back, and we think it has to be some big event or some, you know, act of abuse or something like that that is holding us back, but it could be something that simple.
Yep. Could be that simple. Seriously, I love what you just said. This is important too, because I talk with people that tell me, but Tommy, I had a good childhood. I had a good life as a kid. Okay. But suddenly when we start really digging deeper, we found that mom was working a lot and she wasn't around much. Dad wasn't there because, I don't know, he left the house or he would work overseas or he traveled a lot. So we start seeing small things that although it seemed okay, It wasn't what they needed, the love and acceptance that they constantly needed. So when we don't have the love and acceptance, the mind starts making stories of why we don't deserve this. For a kid, the kid is the center of the universe. So if the kid is not getting what it wants, it doesn't get its needs met, mind needs to make sense of that. It's not going to say, oh, mom is stressed out. That's why she's not giving me a hug like I would like to. That's why she screamed at me. No, the kid is going to say, oh, I'm not good enough. That's why mom is yelling at me. Oh, I did something really bad. I'm a bad boy. That's why my mom is screaming at me. Seriously, that's how the mind works. So we start creating all these stories. And they stick around with us for the rest of our life, even if we're not aware of them. That is a most complicated thing because most people don't even remember their past and don't even see those small moments that created the pain. So I work with a lot of people that feel depressed and they tell me, my life wasn't that bad. That bad compared to what? Oh, I wasn't abused. sexually.
Okay.
It's okay that you think that, but why do you think that only sexual abuse is going to create depression? And as we start digging deeper, we see that there was a disconnect between their parents and between them. Disconnect makes us feel that we're not lovable enough, we're not good enough, we're not adequate, there's something wrong with us. And that's when we go down the road of depression, because I was there. For you, it was 27, around that age, a little bit more or less, around that age, a bit earlier, I had many thoughts. I even walked to a train station and thought about throwing myself into the tracks many times. I didn't do it. That's why I'm here. Nothing happened, right? But I thought about that many times. I was in a very harmful marriage on both sides. I'm going to take responsibility too on both sides, right? And it was really, really depressing moments for me. I had to put a charade that everything was fine on the outside, but deep down, I was kind of dead. I moved away. Like I wasn't seeing my family. I wasn't seeing my friends. I was isolated because of different circumstances. Right? I was isolated inside of me and I was struggling a lot. And I thought about taking my life many times. It was when that marriage ended that I kind of saw the light and said, because she ended up, she said, like, this is not working. We're going to end it. I was like, no, please don't end it. Although part of me wanted to, I didn't want to feel like a failure. I didn't want to lose love. I was fighting to stay in a toxic relationship on both sides because I didn't want to feel like a failed marriage and that I lost love. When she finally told me, leave the house, you know, I don't want to see you anymore. I want you out of my life. We didn't have kids. I walked away and it was like, oh, there's a world out there that I was missing.
Mm-hmm.
Things started to change as I got into this personal development journey 15 years ago.
That's crazy because 27 was a year kind of like that for me. I wasn't married, but I was in a pretty toxic relationship around that time. And it was like when it ended, it was like the end of the world at the time. But, you know, it was for the best for both of us, I think. And so I'm super happy that I met my husband and we've almost been married for 20 years now. So I know that he is the person I'm supposed to be with. And it's been, you know, everybody has challenges, but it's been a great marriage and relationship. So I'm very grateful for that.
I'm glad for you too. I met my wife a couple of months later after the marriage ended. 2 months later, I re-met with a woman that I had dated many, many years ago, a couple of times that I really liked her. We started dating again, and we've been married now for 13 years.
Awesome. Congratulations.
So I was able to find love within me and share it with others, right, along the path. So, yeah.
So how did you start doing this work? I want to hear that story.
So 15 years ago, let's go further back. When I was around 16, 17, I read the Celestine Prophecy book. That it just blew my mind, thinking that there was a bigger reality than just this 3D. And that's what I believe in, right? That there was more to life and I could feel energy. I was very, like, when I was a kid, everybody told me, oh, you're too emotional. You're too emotional. You're too emotional, right? I could tap into everybody else's emotions, right? You know, when they call it, oh, you're an empath. I believe we're all that. We're born with that, but we shut it down when it's painful and we don't know how to handle it. So when I was 16, 17, I was introduced to that book that kind of opened more myself to the world and to different things. But as I opened more, I got more rejection. As I normally say, when I was 3 years old, 3 years and a half, I was operated on my heart. So it was an open heart surgery in 1981. Imagine that. So open heart surgery. I was very small. It left many scars mentally, emotionally, and physically. I felt very different in my family. I felt an outsider. I felt a black sheep. At school, I was bullied a lot. So all those things made me, you know, kind of feel a lot of pain. And a part of the emotional side, feeling others and all that, it was kind of crazy. So I kept open for many years, but with the bullying and everything, as I started opening to this universe in a way, spirituality, imagine we're talking about when I was 16 years old, we're talking about 1994. Back then, it wasn't well known to find people around who say, like, oh, I do yoga. Oh, I meditate. Oh, I read this. Oh, I read that. Now it's more known. Back then, at least in my environment, it was crazy talk. So when I started sharing this, even with my friends, they started laughing at me, making fun of me, making me feel more rejected. So eventually I closed up. And I talked about chakras, I talked about meditation, I talked about many things, right? But it was too hard for me to deal with, so I shut down for many years. Mm-hmm. My best friend from school, that was one of them guys, and I love him, don't get me wrong, but bullied me a lot with this. He found this spiritual teacher and he went to a retreat with her. And he came back and said, Tommy, you got to go meet her. She talks about the same things you talk about. And that was 15 years later. Like I was 16, 17. That was 13 years later. And I was like, oh, really? So at that time, he was more open, my friend. That's why he told me, hey, you got to go see her. So when I met her, she talked a lot about spirituality and a lot about psychology. And she told us that psychology is a blocking thing that keeps us away from spirituality. And I was like, whoa, let me learn more about this. So I started this journey with her. And as she started sharing with me, I felt the, you know, that I wanted to share this with others. So I started helping people. I already was helping people as a kid, but I started doing it a little bit more with more knowledge, more experience. And I started getting trained in this. And then I started going this full time. That's kind of my short story.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm fascinated by the mind and, you know, I don't have a degree in psychology. I don't have that training, but I have done a lot of research about mental health and different things. And it's fascinating to me, the capabilities of our brain and the fact that not many of us even understand what we're capable of in that arena. So it's, I don't know, crazy.
It is. It is amazing. I don't have a degree in psychology. I've studied coaching, therapy, right? But not a degree as a degree. Therapy for several years, coaching for a couple of years. And then I studied, as you did, research and studying many people out there. I've studied Dr. Margaret Pohl. I've studied Gabor Mate. I've studied Peter Krohn. I studied many names out there to see. And what I did is I combined kind of what I think is the best out there. And that's where I created Rapid Subconscious Reprogramming, that everything is based on this love and acceptance, that we need to practice a lot of love and acceptance to be able to create that space for the other person. A lot of people tell me, oh, Tommy, I want to do what you do. Perfect. And they tell me, oh, I'm a life coach. Can you give me a couple of tips or things? And it's like, wait, right? It doesn't matter if you studied 6 months, a year or whatever. If you're not being loving with yourself, more and more, I'm not saying that I have everything resolved, not at all, but I've done a lot of inner work before I started helping others at a deep level as I'm doing now. So it's very important, the self journey first, not just studying, because studying doesn't really mean that you know what's really going on, right?
Yeah, that's very true. I think for me, I had my mom started a business when I was a year old, and it was a nursery school. And so I grew up in that entrepreneurship family environment. And I had my first business at 14. And I've always been like a super driven person. So like you said, when I started hearing about yoga and, you know, all of these things, it was very woo-woo to me. And I was not at all interested in it. I was like, I don't understand it. I don't, you know, I think the real reason was I didn't understand it and I didn't take the time to understand it. And so I would just push myself and push myself and push myself for, you know, a lot of years where I didn't necessarily take care of myself. And alcohol was a problem. You know, there was just the workaholic in me was a problem. And, you know, in 2020, I was at a point where I was starting to kind of process my journey in the mental health situation. And after losing my friend, and I also owned a business that was very successful at the time. And people would always tell me, you should journal. And I was like, I don't have time for that. And so when 2020 happened, it was the first time I ever started seeing a therapist, the first time I ever started journaling. And I cannot tell you how much it changed everything for me, because you know, like many people, I thought I was the only one who had the feelings and the thoughts that I had, and I would just stuff them away and keep going. And I think that's the problem, is that now people talk more about mental health, but it doesn't mean that each person that is struggling with something feels like it's okay for them to speak up. And I think that is the number one message. If I could get to the whole world, it would be, it is okay for you to speak up. Just find someone that you feel safe talking to. And I also talk a lot to people who have a loved one that's struggling. And like, because they're like, what do I say? How can I help? And they want to help, but they don't know how. And it's like, the first thing you can do is just listen. Because if you could let them feel good enough to talk about it, it's going to help them on some level.
Exactly.
So look, a couple of things that are very interesting, right, that I want to just share with you.
Please.
You said that alcohol was a problem and workaholic was a problem, okay? I want to invite you to check those words into the love language, right? Love language would be, it's not a problem, it's a solution. You found alcohol as a numbing tool. So good for you that you found somehow to survive in this craziness that you are going through emotionally and mentally. A lot of people talk about problems. Normally, the problem is not the problem. It's the solution to a deeper problem. So you're in pain and you found alcohol and working as a numbing mechanism. So clap, clap, clap for you. But when we say it's a problem, we're judging that. We got to be very careful. Remember the love language is loving and accepting what is. It is a solution that you found. See what I mean? The difference there?
I do.
Those very subtle things that I want to bring awareness with my message to, as you're saying, right? My message there is to be more aware of the way we speak, the way others speak to themselves, to others, right? Because as we bring this love language forward, suddenly there's like, oh, no. Imagine somebody says, I have drinking problems. Hey, I appreciate you share that. Thank you very much. But you know what? It's not a problem. It's a solution. And they're like, what? Suddenly the charge that they're putting onto it, like, oh, I'm bad. I'm doing something wrong. It's like, wait, it's a solution? What are you talking about? If somebody's in pain, they're going to take a pill, an Advil, ibuprofen, whatever, to try to reduce the pain. It's a numbing of the pain. Alcohol is the same way. So you're using that as a solution to try to survive what you're going through.
That's a really good way to look at it. I think it's sometimes maybe something that we are doing to numb the pain is harming us more, but we have to figure out, you know, I don't know, what would you say to that?
Perfect. So look, I love what you just said. Let's do the exercise I would do with somebody, right? And then struggle with that. So I would tell them, okay, so alcohol is bringing certain problems, right? What are the secondary problems that alcohol is bringing? You say it brings problems. What type of problems? I know, but just give me an example. Yeah. Just like,
I think it's like, you know, you either don't remember things or you wake up feeling worse than you did before you drank.
Okay, so two things. Let's stick with that so that we don't extend too much, right? So, forget things. For the mind is the best thing you can do for. If I have pain from past memories and I can forget about them, please give me the pill that is going to make me forget when I was abused, when I wasn't feeling loved, when I felt alone, when I was left alone, when I was hit, when I was yelled at. Give me that pill, please. So it's not a problem. You see what I mean? The feeling like crap, I get it. I like that. Let's address that a second. So let me ask you this, right? If somebody's in emotional pain, but there's still no electronic device or mechanism to measure that pain, but I tell you this, Jan, if their pain is 8, but their pain when they wake up the next day, this pain went down, but the physical pain went up, but not enough, surpassing the emotional pain, they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So again, it's okay. Because why? As I was saying, the dance of fears is if I drink, I feel like crap, but I still drink. So what you're telling me indirectly, this is the conclusion that I draw in my mind is, you're telling me, I want to stop drinking, but it's really bad for me. Okay, so you realize. So there's fear of having health issues. You know, I work with people that have already health issues for this, right? So they have health issues. The fear of the health issue is smaller than the fear of the pain that they're going through, the memories that they went through as kids. So that's why they keep drinking. So a lot of gurus, what would they do is they would hit on this pain to make it bigger so that the fear of dying, the fear of losing everything, their house, their partner, their kids, whatever, is so big that now from fear, from a higher fear of doing, they stop drinking. But it's still the dance of fears. Fear takes a big toll in the body when we work at those levels of fear. Fear is okay. Don't get me wrong. It's part of the human experience. The problem is when we use that. But if we truly bring love, because look at this a second. Look what I want to say. This is the spine of my work, the center of the work, right? A part of you started drinking because it didn't feel loved and accepted. It might have felt rejected. It might have felt judged, criticized, something, right? So a part of you started drinking because it didn't feel loved. If I scare the shit out of me to stop drinking, am I loving and accepting the part of me that needed love in the first place? That's why it started drinking.
No.
So with this work, we need to love and accept the part of you that was lacking love and decided to use alcohol to numb the pain of the lack of love. When you're able to love that part of you and start practicing the self-love, I promise you when it's done correctly and along some time, sometimes people take longer, sometimes there's no exact formula for each person. Some people say, okay, but how long is this going to take? Depends on each person, seriously. But as you practice that, I promise you, if you practice this and you create that, you know, constant practice, promise you that eventually you're going to stop doing that behavior because that behavior was created by lack of love. If I'm loving that part, I'm giving to it what it needed in the first place. So it's going to replace the alcohol with receiving the love. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. I think it maybe some could think it's more complicated than that, but I think it does make sense.
Good. The people that want to think it's more complicated because they want to see the mind as something more complicated. And the truth is, again, what does a kid want? Let's go to the basics. What does a kid want as a kid?
Love.
What do we want? Love. So if I didn't get that love, I need to do something to fill that empty space or numb the pain. These are the two human drivers are these. Seeking for love, people pleasing, you know, not speaking up, not setting boundaries. That is, in a way, seeking for love. I accept anything because I want to receive love. Or numbing the pain of the lack of love. Alcohol, procrastination, whatever is numbing the pain of the lack of love. So that's how basic the mind is. But from there, if a kid doesn't feel loved, he's going to find something to try to reverse that. Or numbing it or finding love. Perfectionism. People-pleasing is a way of finding love. If I please you, you might like me. If you like me, I feel loved. That's how basic the mind is. People want to complicate it because the mind wants to complicate things. That's how the mind is. Thank God, seriously, we'll say something. It's going to sound a bit arrogant, but thank God, since I'm a kid, I've been trying to make things simple. When I started emergency care for many years, I was in emergency care for 15 years, and I became an instructor in emergency care. I always wanted to bring things to the simplest form so people would get it. And that's what I'm doing now with the mind. I'm bringing it to very, and you saw the training, very simple concepts to understand how the mind works because the mind is not this complicated computer that everybody talks about like, oh, it's so complicated. No, the mind is looking for love or numbing the pain of the lack of love. Then, yes, it becomes more complicated on the behaviors and the interaction among those things. We've got to bring it down. Most people drink to numb the pain. And I have found people, and listen to this, how amazing mine is, that they drink because they want to become part of the family. Mom and dad drank, and now they drink because maybe by doing this, I might get connection with mom or dad. And seeking for
love. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I mean, people pleasing is it's definitely something that's been in my life. And I think part of it is because I've worked in the hospitality industry for 30 years and you're constantly, you know, taking care of other people and their needs. And it's, you don't realize the toll that it takes on you until you get to a point where it's kind of that breaking point or that, you know, that realization of, Like, I need to take care of me. So yeah, it's really important. And I think I don't usually mention this, but I wrote a book 2 years ago called The Shower Genius, which is a 12-step framework for leaders and entrepreneurs and busy professionals to wake up and see that they need to take better care of themselves. And nice. So it's kind of my new mission in the world, because I didn't do it for myself for so long. And it's like, how do we create those boundaries, or whatever you want to call them, put things in place in your life where you're not working 24/7 and think that that is normal.
That comes from a lack of love. And again, we go back to the same thing. They have associated that if they work 24/7, they're going to feel loved and accepted, maybe by their parents, that they're looking at them like proud, even in their mind. This is so amazing. But people, I'm working with a guy that he's an engineer, and he recognized in his 65 years old, more or less he is, he told me the other day, he told me, I cannot believe that I just realized that I did what I did and I became an engineer and all this work that I've done because I want to please my dad. And my dad is not around. He hasn't been around for many years, and I'm still trying to please him. The mind is trying to please that parent because, again, it's living in the past. There's a part of us that is replaying the past that wants to please dad. Even though he's not there, for that part of you, that part doesn't know it's not there, because we're talking at a 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 15-year-old, 20-year-old that is replaying things in the mind. And again, the mind has no time, but is replaying an event as if it were happening. It has its own consciousness. It's amazing.
That is so true.
Connecting his adult part, him today, with that memory from the past, so that it can release that part of him from pleasing dad, because it was looking for love. As he loved and accepted that part of him, he was able to start letting go of that. One of the things that I saw, you know, the letting go, right? Letting go is so important with understanding, not just, I have to let go. That's authoritarianism.
That is so true. Well, I've learned a lot from listening to your training and from talking to you today. And I hope our listeners will get much value out of this conversation. You want to tell us where to find you?
If they want to look up, I have lots of free resources. I have a lot of material. I have my own book, The Science Behind the Mind and Behavior. It's connecting the mind and the heart, as I was saying before, right? Other things, you can look me up, themindengineer.com. Right? I'm also on Facebook. I have different platforms that I'm in. My biggest is all the website or Facebook. Others, one are just starting to grow. I mean, TikTok, Instagram, things like that, but those are slowly growing, you know. And website is the biggest place you can find me, as themindengineer.com. You can find some free trainings, access my book. I have a course. Or if you want some help one-on-one, just reach out and we can talk about options.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tommy.
Thank you very much.
And for anyone who's listening, you can find us at therealizefoundation.org. If you're interested in just learning more, we have a free hope course on our website that talks about, you know, how do we start the conversation about mental health and suicide? How do we support somebody that we care about that is going through something? So you can find those resources there. You can also find some of our partners and sponsors there. And also, if you're interested in writing your story in one of our books, For Scars to Stars, there's a way you can submit your information on the Scars to Stars page. So I hope you will find us or follow us or join us. We're on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter, or X now. So you can find us in any of those places under either the Realize Foundation or Scars to Stars. So I hope you all have a wonderful day, and we hope to see you in our community.
I'm so happy you joined us for this conversation. My wish is that you found comfort and hope in your own unique situation. If you resonated with our message, please head over to therealizefoundation.org, where you can apply to write your own story in one of our books. You can also download our 60 Ideas for Self-Care on the resources page. I can't wait to hear from you. Until next time, you are not alone, you are worthy, and you are enough.